and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John. Had to get one of those. Had to do it.
Well, welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
my very right guy.
And you're very white indeed.
Had to do it. You just had to do it. You licked a butthole, didn't you?
What's that from?
No, because you had to do it. You ate a box of Nerds from a stripper's butthole, didn't you?
Oh,
from
Pineapple Express.
You just had to do it.
Yeah.
That's an auspicious start to
very
the podcast.
Very auspicious start.
Well, thanks for joining us, Mom.
See how this goes. This will be wonderful. If this is your first time joining us, welcome, I guess. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. And we're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. Again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
I'm just saying you could leave a review.
You could leave a review.
That's all. Not a lot.
You could leave a review. You can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it here.
There's
got
to be like some minimum. Like, I understand. Like, the review's got to be at least 6 words or something. Like, unless you do a review of like half a sentence. But
I think you can literally just put a smiley face.
Maybe.
We'll take it.
That'd be the minimal.
We'll take it. You can also email us, interracialjohn@gmail.com, and you can also call us. Just pick up the phone and dial 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JOHNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we'll play here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And also shout out to Rod and Karen. I listened to their feedback show this morning, and they told the entire Miami Revolt music conference panel experience and everything. And it was just so awesome to just hear the entire story of just how awesome it was and just, you know, just all the cool stuff they got to do. It's fucking so well deserved, and I love seeing Karen happy for them.
And Rod getting shine. I love seeing Chris from Insanity, him getting like, you know, like fucking press passes to these fucking things and shit, like literally
they're
right
serious in these streets.
Yeah. But she can't had I don't really do the gram. I don't do it for the gram. But you show me the gram. I'm like
look at this.
I'm gram adjacent. Yeah, like, yeah. You're like, look at this. And you showed me and I was like, every time, like, still to this day, you show me the gram, I'll go to like pinch it. You're
like doesn't work.
You can't zoom the Instagram. You can't
actually
fucking,
I think now you can.
Can you zoom Instagram?
Now you can.
Fucking about time. Maybe new. Now I'll join. But so Karen had posted like a 6-picture triptych of like herself before the panel.
Yes.
Oh my god, I had to like tweet her like
she was beat
god
to the
damn, my god.
They had a professional
she always looks good. She always looks good.
She was just like glowing. Just
my
beautiful.
Gosh.
Gorgeous. And congratulations.
Yeah,
and if you want to hear all about it, definitely listen to their feedback show from Saturday, because they tell the whole story and everything, and it's just so great to hear. And even when I was down in Charlotte, we went out to dinner, it was really funny that I was asking them about the trip, and Karen was super excited, and Ron was like, yeah, I'll believe it when it happens. Because you know how he is, you know, just so like chill with everything. So it was cool to hear, you know, them both talk about the whole experience all the way through from each of their perspectives. And then Rod did this like entire like full on ode to Karen at the end of the show. And I literally started crying, and it was beautiful. And that's why it's my favorite podcast. So that's all I have to
say. And you and Karen just collaborated on a t-shirt.
We did. So
Run,
so,
Jesse, Run.
Yeah. So Jesse Quick got introduced on The Flash this past week. And Harrison Wells had the great line, Run, Jesse, Run. And so Karen was on Facebook. She was just like, where's a Run, Jesse, Run shirt? I need that one.
In my life.
And I said, she's like, she can't be able to find it anywhere. And I was like, well, why don't we make one? So we did make one, and you can find it at teespring.com/Run, Jesse, Run. And yeah, check it out. We have a couple of different styles, some different colors. It's pretty cute.
Oh, well, that benefits you and Karen, yeah?
It does. Benefits both of us.
Black women, black female choo podcasters. Choo. Yeah, let's do it. I love
get
it.
Out there, yeah.
Run, Jesse, run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love that. Like, you say sometimes, like, that can't always be the solution. Like, make your own. Like, that can't be it. But you do that a lot. It can't always be the solution, but
I mean, sometimes it's easy. If it's low-hanging fruit, yeah, we can. We can do that.
You're good at that solution.
Yeah. Sometimes there's ways to make it.
I guess we're doing the catch up. Is that?
Yeah, we're just catching up. Yeah,
there needs to be some sort of like trumpets or something.
Trumpets.
Yeah, because like, I tried to tweet about it, and I know I just like got like emotional with like me and you talking about it, and I'm gonna like not do that here.
Yeah, because, please don't, because I don't want to get
the
emotional.
The genres don't need it. The genres don't need it.
Yeah,
but it just like, I don't know. Like, I just don't think people quite understand like just the magnitude of it and what that it came from nothing, you know, but like an idea, and you and your determination and some other folks, obviously, a lot of other folks, obviously, you know, and at the end of the day, like, you got our organization to commit $5 million to Black liberation work in our faith. That's unfucking believable.
I still, like, I don't think I'm believable. Fully,
like, I said the sentence to Dr. Masmooth and Mustache, right? Like, I'm saying that. I'm like, and I said it to other friend that was at the bar with last night. I'm like, man, I just, like, I can't, I couldn't say enough about how, like, there's no words I could share with somebody that's not, you know, here and seeing you do it and in our faith and, like, you know, participating in all these things that could convey just the sheer, just like, I there are no words. I'm literally just astounded. I'm not surprised, but it just, it blows me away. It blows me away.
Well, it's funny because a lot of times, like, in our meetings, like, we'll, you know, we'll have these, like, moments sometimes where we'll be very, like, you know, positively thinking about the outcomes of the things we want to do, you know, kind of. And, you know, just talking about that. And we often say, like, we've already won, right? We say that all the time, like, we've already won. And before we did the presentation, we had, like, a little meeting. And that was kind of our mantra, just like, you know, we've already got it. Like, it's already ours. Like, no matter what, like, we're going to do this. We're going to accomplish the things we want to accomplish and build the things that we want to build. So it was very like, there was a real like spiritual, you know, connection to it. And yeah, I mean, it was,
I mean,
crazy.
Just so people are aware, what happened was our board, the UUA, Unitarian Universalist Association board, had a meeting. They have a variety of meetings, but they convened and, decided, right? And they did a couple of things that I think they're not what's the word I'm looking at? They're deliberate, right? They're not accidental, but they're important. And I think people don't always see that in the bigger picture. It's like, oh, you know, $5 million. Like, wow, the UUA gave $5 million to the Black Lives UU, you know, collective. But the money came without, I wouldn't say like contingencies and stipulations, but specifically outside the like governance of the UUA. They can't be like telling you to like, here's what you got to do. You got to do this and you got to report to us.
Right.
And that was very specific. Mm-hmm. And before they even went to do it, they like voted to not do the normal Robert rules, because the Robert rules of order was really like contentious at our General Assembly 2 years ago with a action.
And just like, to be real, like, they're just very steeped in like, you know, imbalance of power. They're very steeped in supremacy, and it's just not really, you know, the, I would say some of that is what happened in 67 and 68 is, and we saw it at the AIW where we have, you know, people of color, marginalized people coming with their hearts in their hands and laying it all out there. And we have this white response of, you know, form and, you know, unbendable order. And it's just like, it does not fit. It doesn't, it's not an appropriate response, well, you know?
You know, but you always say that, you know, you have to want to, for things to be different, mm-hmm. you have to want them to be different. And then you have to do things differently.
Yeah.
You have to be like, you know, the be the change you want to see kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so moving forward, getting the funding, right? And it's an endowment. It's not like, oh, you get $5 million to like buy a fucking Ferrari. It's like, you know, there's money that's like sitting somewhere and you get the like interest from it kind of thing.
Correct.
It's not like,
so it's a long-term investment.
Correct. Sure. Yeah. But you can do a lot with it. It can now like, you know, fund things and you mm-hmm. can raise around it and blah, blah, all sorts of stuff. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with it, but I don't say speed maybe, but just, again, I can't just get over the fact that it went from like, you know, in Cleveland at the convening, the M4BL convening, just like, hey, there's, you know, you're there, you're organizing the convening. So it's like, okay, you're intimately involved. And one of the things you thought like, well, maybe I can get UUs together. How many other Black organizers and activists are UUs? And, you know, how many were at that meeting?
I think in total, there's probably like 14 Black UUs at the convening. And we met over like different combinations of people met over three different meals, so like a lunch, a dinner, and a breakfast. And that was kind of the time we squeezed in to talk with each other.
And of the original BLU collective, I guess, of the beginning of it, how many were at that meeting? Was Kenny and Lena and Carlton there?
Kenny was the only one that was not there. So Lena was there. Carlton was there. Royce was there.
Wow.
Alandria, obviously, she was another one of the coordinators. So Alandria was there and I was there.
Yeah. And just again, just it came from, you know, that was, I don't know, was that 24 months ago?
No, it was 14 months.
The convening
was, yeah.
24 months ago.
No, it was just a year this past July. So not 24 months.
No. Yeah. It was a year this past July.
It was July 2015.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
It was 2015. Where the frick is my head?
It was when we moved here.
Dang. So not even like 15 months.
Yeah, that's what I said.
$5 million.
Oh, today, literally was the first actual in-person meeting we had in Boston. I flew out. Carlton and I took the train from New York up together. Today, literally today.
So it wasn't even like a year ago, face to face.
Was when we had our first actual like, all right, we're doing something kind of meeting with each other. We had done stuff already because we'd done the seven principles and stuff, but we went to go plan the GA track.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it's kind of crazy, and
there's no amount of words and accolades and respect and then just for me it's not even like I have to be like, oh my god, that's so amazing. Just like it is amazing, but I've had a front seat to the work that went into it, and it's not a small amount. I've seen the meetings you've held and the conversations and the work that's gone into it, and I just, you know, there is no better feeling than an accomplishment worthy of achieving. And this one was really worthy of achieving, and you put a lot into it. So congratulations, babe.
Well, thank you. We're very excited. We're all going to be in New Orleans next week for a fall retreat. We're planning our convening and happy to have the financial support to actually pull it off the way we want to and have as many black folks at the table as we can. And it was an honor to be in the room and such a joy to be working with all of my teammates, so shout out to all of them.
Yeah, you all did an amazing job, you know.
Yes.
And all different, you know, parts and work and a lot went into it, like I said.
Yeah.
It's many conversations.
It's a collective for a reason, for sure. And we went to St. Louis, speaking of our faith, which was pretty cool. We got to go to St. Louis. And
Unruly Rev. Shout out.
I don't remember a lot of it because I literally was in such a stunned state from the board meeting that I was kind of like, I don't know if you could tell, I was a little dazed a little bit.
First of all, it was hot as balls. What was that
really
about?
It was warm everywhere, though, I think.
It was so warm. I was like, this is really hot.
Thanks, Obama. Just kidding.
Fucking Obama. Global warming. Jeez.
Thanks, Obama. I never had to worry about any of this stuff before Obama.
Yeah, it was definitely warm, but it was awesome seeing Unruly Rev.
Shout out to her and
family.
Her family. Oh my God. Those kids.
I don't want to say the names,
I
obviously.
Can't.
But the one... he called my Uncle Drew.
Oh.
He did. He's like, Uncle Drew. Like, he said it almost like spontaneously. Mm. He's like, Uncle Drew, come here and do this thing. I'm like, oh my God. Uncle Drew.
They were so fun. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to go back again.
They asked for the address so they could send us some things they drew for us.
Oh, sweet.
I was like, I love it. That's so great.
Yeah, we have to send them something too.
Yeah. It was too fun.
It was really fun. And we got to see, you got to see the show finally. What'd you think?
It was awesome. I've seen them before at the GA and on the YouTubes, or I guess you were somewhere else. I think I saw them. It was Atlanta. Or was it the Many Rivers? I saw a good portion of the set. But it was great.
Live is different.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, yeah, but it was a good show, too. And then we did your workshop, which was cool.
Yeah, that was good. I'm not mad about it. I wish I wanted to... I think you like deliberately like threw me in the fire, but that's okay.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things about organizing that sometimes you gotta...
Sure, yeah.
Make some... Uh-huh. Hard decisions.
You gotta break some eggs to make an omelet. I gotcha.
Not necessarily break some eggs, but just sometimes people need a little push. Sometimes you gotta recognize those moments when you have a little push. If there had been more people, I wouldn't have done it. I'll tell you the truth. I had a couple of different things planned.
Sure.
But because the group was so small, I was like, nah, it's time. Let's do it.
It went okay.
It went great.
There was,
I think for the first time it went really well. I think a lot of people there took a lot from it. Several of them wrote something to Blue about it. So that said exactly that. So
that's good. I got to get the whole shindig, as your mom would say, online and get that done with my partner on really bad. Mm-hmm. And get that submitted. I've got like a deadline for GA coming up.
Yeah, coming up quick.
I know. Trust me, I know.
Very quickly. And
it was good.
Oh, and I delivered a sermon in Alton, Illinois, which was interesting.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it was good. But there was one person. There's always one. I hate to say a white woman, but it's usually a white woman. That just like, you know, sometimes like we white people like fixate on one thing. Like we'll just like, I'll do this. Like I'll get it in my head like blah. Like red and blue make fucking like magenta, goddamn it. Like that's what it is. And blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, I get like really like fixated on a thing. And this white woman was very fixated on sort of like we should be lifting up the voices of the marginalized, right?
You know?
And even in the workshop, the presentation, I'm talking about like the people at the intersection are the experts, right? Like, you know, like that's why this movement is like, you know, being led by like black, queer, trans, femme, women, young, youth. You know what I'm saying? Like, like people at the intersection of most of those things have the, you know, they understand oppression and racism in a way inherently because they live it in a way that we just never could, right? That's the explaining water to a fish bit. But so she really was just like, why are we not listening to black people? I came here to listen to black people. quite specifically was like, I think she came here to listen to you. Like I was told that like, you know, Leslie Mack was going to be here talking. Like,
right.
Why isn't Leslie Mack talking? Like, why are we listening to the white man? And like, she kept kind of going on to it. I tried to explain it a couple of times. And then like, you tried to explain it and she kept going on and on and on.
And I will say like, we did talk, like I did an entire introduction at the beginning of it. We also took over several times, both Lena and I, to discuss questions and respond to a few things and to interject a few things. So we were definitely not mute at all.
No, I'm going to incorporate a little bit of what you said. So I talk about like the 1, 2, 3, and I have the like PhD math analogy kind of thing, but I like the A to Z, and it's like, you know, you just, there's not a whole lot you can do. You're not gonna be very effective in dismantling a system, and, you know, to use the math analogy, you're not going to add to a body of knowledge of mathematics if you're like working with like someone who's like just learning their like multiplication tables.
And also it's like harmful. Like we shouldn't have to like literally have conversations with you about our humanity just because you don't understand it, a concept yet. Like get yourself together, then we can talk. And that's really what it is. It's like, you know, you don't walk up to somebody who doesn't speak a language and just start like spouting baby talk at them. Like you don't do that.
Well, and that's in the introduction to that was like, so that, you know, the purpose of this is so that you can navigate that and educate yourself to the point that you're no longer causing less harm, and you're able to, you know, like actually go through these, you know, interactions without fucking like having like, you know, abusive shit, right?
Yeah
because you don't want
to
do that.
No, you know, like
you don't want to do that. But like the A to Z is kind of nice. Like, listen, like, you know, like I hear you. You're right. You should be like talking and working and being accountable to black people. But like, let's get to like LM. You know, we're ABC.
There's nothing that I could add to the conversation that she couldn't literally read. Somebody else has already said. Like, it's nothing new to the conversation that I need to tell her right now.
And go ahead.
Yeah, I mean that's all I would say too. It's like,
I don't want to go. Can I go sidebar? Can I go tangential?
You can if you want to.
So has that been announced, the person that's coming as a big keynote paid speaker to GA?
I mean, the email I sent, I'm pleased to announce that.
So, and I'm not mad about it, but I am like, I think it's worthy of some discussion, maybe question. So they've invited Robin DiAngelo, and I share her white fragility thesis more than anything else. I tell people to like learn and understand it. I think it's like, you know, like super important and critical on like the pinned tweet. Like, you know, if you're trying to be not fucking indoctrinated and horrible, here's some things you can do. And like one of them is like white fragility. Seriously? Did I mention white fragility? Oh, by the way, like learn about white fragility. So I think it's really critical, but I don't think her coming is critical. Like her whole thesis is online. Like you can read the whole fucking thing, like all 40 whatever pages. Like there it is. Like libjournal.whatever.edu. Read it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's, I don't know why it's so always like, oh, we want to pay her to come and speak. That seems, again, I'm not mad, but I think it is worthy of a little bit of like, what could that money have done in a different, because just like they nickel and, I don't say they, the UUA, I felt, because that's who's paying to have her come speak, right? They decide.
Well, no, it's one of these groups. I don't know which group it is.
Oh, it is. Okay. So then I shouldn't be mad about it, I guess.
Why?
I don't know. I feel weird complaining about it, because I'm not complaining about it. Because
it's a choice. And here's the thing. Like, there's part of it that's like, whoa, people will get excited about that thing. But also, there's a level of, like, you should be confronting why they get excited about that thing. And, like, there's strategy, yes. Like, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, in the whole path from that table at the convening to this board meeting last week, you know, there was a lot of strategy that we all employed to get to that point. But there were times where it's like, you know what, our strategy can't like overtake like what we're trying to do, which is do something different, build something differently, right?
Right.
And so that's where, there's a little bit of give and take there. You know, when I hear people say like, oh, we really love Reverend Barber because we think he's going to be the next MLK, like that's problematic. And so that's why I have a problem with it. It's not about Reverend Barber or his message or his work, all of which are fine, good, amazing. Like, it's nothing about him, but it's about continuing to go into patterns that feel familiar and good when we already know that they didn't lead to actual change. So that's where I have the problem. And so there's a little bit of that here. You know, I'm not willing to say that it is or isn't. I'm just saying that, you know, as an organizer, like that's the analysis I would offer about things like that is, you know, you do need to analyze when, you know, doing the status quo can help you, right? So maybe more people will be interested in it. Let me give you an example of what the different things that could be in the mix here on either side of the scale, like having somebody like this and not having them, right? So the good thing would be like, well, people have heard of her. As you said, people share her stuff all the time. She is kind of like, you know, at the Tim Wise level of, you know, whatever that thing is. And my thing is like, what is that thing? And is that something we want to be participating in? So those are the two things that have to be weighed. I don't know the answer to them. It's not my group. I certainly didn't say, yeah, we're about that and or interested in it at all.
ARE? Do you know which group?
I don't know, and I don't have my email open right now to see it. But
doesn't matter, I guess. Yeah, I guess you're right. That's the overreaching question. And I guess if it's not the UUA, it's a little bit different of a lens in terms of the critical.
Yeah.
View.
I mean, I think it could go, you know, great, and it could be really wonderful. I just would caution that it not be seen as like that's the thing that they did. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
that's where it tends to go because it seems like a big thing. They would have spent a lot of money. They would have expended a lot of capital.
We love talking to do that.
You know, and so there's a tendency because of those things to make it seem like it was something that was done when it really isn't anything. So and it's the same with this money. You know, we Lena mentioned this on The View last week. Just that, like, you know, this is. A, it's money that was owed to Black people in our faith for over 50 years.
Yeah.
So let's not lose sight of that portion of it. You know, it is a level of reparations, which is very, you know, critical, historical, and important for our faith to heal itself. But also, you know, there's a tendency to think of it as a win when the work that needs to be done after now is much bigger than just writing any size check. To really transform our faith and through that to change, the world in some way. So that's all I would say. I'm very excited about it. And at the same time, you know, I recognize the tendency to sometimes overinflate the effect of these decisions, you know, because what comes next is the important part.
Yeah, we do that a lot, I think, in terms of like you use them in our faith, like not just overstate, but like, oh, we like almost like talking about, like, I feel like having Robin DiAngelo at GA, like there's a little bit of a, like that turns into like, oh, one of our friends is Black. You know what I mean?
We have a sign up at our church.
Yeah.
It turns into wearing the bracelet.
Yeah.
That turns into all of
we
those
had Robin
things.
DiAngelo.
But still, when a Black person comes into your church that's been a member for 5 years and you say, oh, where are you from? They look at you like, are you kidding me right now? Like, you know, so there's work to be done. That's all I'll say. There's work to be done. But it is exciting. And
you were doing a sermon and.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that. I was on transformation. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was a sermon I did on transformation, just talking about a lot of the stuff we're just talking about right now, which is, you know, that you have to do things differently to actually change and that you have to do it consistently. You know, I talked a lot in the sermon about how UUs are really good at being inspired, right? It's like our thing. We soak it up. We take inspiration from every religion, every theory, every theology, everything. You know, we bring all of that in and pick all the stuff that inspires us. But it's like being inspired only gets you so far. You have to actually do something with the inspiration.
You remember on CIA, which I thought was kind of like cute and funny, the Kevin Hart movie, but the opening character, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's like overweight and kind of geeky.
Yeah.
And then like later he's like, you know, ripped Dwayne Johnson.
Right.
And he's like, Jesus Christ, like, what did you do? He's like, you know, it's just real simple. You know, you get up every day and you work out for 6 hours. Every day.
For seven, for 20
for
years.
For 20 years.
Anybody can do that, right?
It's real simple.
Real simple.
So, yeah. We like to be inspired, right, about that.
Yes. So, yeah.
Well, so tell me about, I guess, a woman at the end of the sermon. I guess she came up and said Mike Brown's life didn't matter or something.
Well, she said, she started off saying that, you know, she disagreed with my characterization of what happened in Ferguson. I was like, okay. And then, you know, she was like, well, I just think you should have... Well, no, actually, first she started with, it should be called Black Lives Matter, too, because then more white people, yeah, sure, you know, could understand it. And I'm like, okay, but that's really easy to focus on that instead of what we're trying to actually do. And just kind of went into, like, that's what supremacy does, is try to focus on some very small, you know, pedantic, almost grammatical point to derail an actual conversation about change that needs to happen and what's wrong in the world. And she was like... Well, I just, then she went into, she didn't care, she didn't agree with my characterization of what happened in Ferguson and this, that, the other thing. And then she talked about how she, because she doesn't think all lives matter. She doesn't think every life is worthy, and that, you know, Mike Brown, let the shooting and the killing was justified, basically, is what she was saying. And I was like, okay, I was like, but, you know, I just kind of pushed back and I was like, I don't understand, you know, you're saying this, which indicates you don't think that all lives are have worth. And she's like, I don't think they do. And I was like, well, I don't understand how you're you. That's not what we believe. Are you? And she goes, well, I'm you, you know, I'm kind of you. But I love coming to you because here you can do anything you want.
Yeah. I love coming here because I can do anything I want.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I hear that, like, about you use them all the time.
And I literally was like, you cannot do everything, anything you want. And you definitely cannot espouse that you don't think that all lives have worth, because our number one principle that we have all covenanted to is the belief in the inherent worth and dignity of all people, literally.
And I like how you basically were like, well, if you don't believe that in our first principle, then you and I have nothing to talk about.
I literally was like, I don't have anything to talk to you about.
There's nothing to share. We have no shared framework.
Deuces.
And that's why, like, I feel like these conversations have to happen in our faith. Because with that shared framework, you don't have to start with your humanity.
Right.
You don't have to fucking argue with your fucking humanity. You know, like, that's not the beginning. Like, nope, okay, see ya, bye.
And it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be a question. It shouldn't be. Not for fucking one. Honestly, and like, you can say what you want about youism. For me, because that's the first principle, that to me is what this faith, like, I couldn't tell you the other six principles. I could, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, that one just really, and then it's the first one.
What's the one they sell, you know? It's the one that they.
It certainly spoke to me. And I was just like, okay, got it. You know, I get it. This is how I've been leading my life. And now there's a shared faith that kind of has the same, like, you know, humanistic doctrine and approach.
Right.
I was like, that's fucking unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a fucking, one of the ministers locally is like a mystic. Like, literally, like, you know, like.
A mystic humanist or something?
Yeah, like moons and fucking, like, divinations and shit, right? Like, I'm here for that. Like, I really am.
I know you are, babe. I know. Yes, yeah. I'm aware. Mm. So, yeah. So, anyways, that was cool. And then you got to meet up with your white accountability squad. Which, tell the people what that is.
So, just in the beginning, on Twitter, I was like, kind of like, you know, making my way. And I think any white person, there's like a path you do sort of like as a, oh, I'm trying to be less fucking ridiculous and more anti-racist, and I don't know what to do and how to do. Like, so you start like beating up on trolls, like that's kind of easy and like low hanging fruit and shit. But so like for me, I wanted to make sure that I just, you know, wasn't a detriment and try to do well. And so you have people around you that can call you in and say, hey, you're, you know, what are you doing here? Would that look weird? And, just, you can check in like, hey, I was thinking this, I got to talk to this person. I'm struggling with this conversation I have to have. And I've done that. I'll call people, you know, me and the first person I ever did that was Unruly Rev. And that's kind of where our relationship is really, you know, it's been the hallmark of our relationship, you know, to have these sort of conversations.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, And I remember the very first one we both were having where, so like white guilt as a emotion is totally pointless and it doesn't do anything. And it's kind of like, it doesn't serve anything, but it's still kind of like real. Like the actual, like you, the sensation, like the actual emotion you're having at that moment, it's like, you know, it doesn't serve to like pretend that it doesn't exist, right? It doesn't help. It's not a valuable response, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. And there's other things that are like that too, where it's like, listen, I know this is my kind of my white fuckery, and like I don't really want to like bother like Leslie with this shit, and like I'm not going to bother you with it, but I need to unpack it. I need to like just talk about it. Like I just, it's not going to like go away by myself in a bubble.
Right.
That's not going to happen. So really it's like, you know, it's a, to some degree the like, that white nonsense Roundup is doing it with like, you know, like low hanging stuff. I feel like more on a higher level where it's like, you know, I don't want this to be an issue for me. I really got to figure this out. I got to talk to some people. And, so I've got a few in St. Louis that we met, mm-hmm. people that I like and care about, and we had lunch with, and it's good. You know, I think that's important to have people like that that you can kind of talk to and say, hey, listen, you know. And in both directions, I've had, you know, there are people that I know and care about that have had, I don't know, they've stepped in it, for lack of a better word, where I've had to be like, you know, and always privately and in loving and kindness and, you know, and I'm, and the person, interestingly enough, like really, like this is there's somebody that I know goes real hard, but sometimes problematically. Mm. And the one thing, like, oh man, like I know there's some black people that are just like, oh, just like, you know, like this, keep this like white ally horse fuckery a billion miles away from me. Like really, like there was like the step in, it was like, yikes. And the conversation I had to have with the person was really kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was really fucking tough. And, you know, like I had to like read some stuff that people were really upset about it, and like had to help navigate like, okay, this is what I think, you know, I'm not saying do this, but this is my opinion, like, because, you know, this is public, you got to address it this way and that way. And I'm not saying that like it was anything that I did, because the person really was like committed to this work and committed to like learning from it. But my God, that was a fuck up of magnitude. Like, I don't know a lot of people that would have kept going from that.
Mm.
You know, give my man credit. You know, you guess you try hard, you fuck up hard.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
I always say risk is real.
Yeah. You know, and I've done it. I've made plenty of fucking, you know, it's not like I haven't been called in. happens plenty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still a white dude.
But that's the work, though.
That is the work. And I
like all this shit that's like, oh, you might be embarrassed. You might feel bad. You might have your feelings hurt. We're talking about people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Like, I always try and, like, just put in perspective. And I say it about myself all the time. Like, all the struggles I go through as a organizer, you know. I'm not in jail. I'm not, you know, physically being oppressed right now. And plenty of people are. So, there are sacrifices we all have to take.
Hear. The risk is real. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Get serious. Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
The news is coming on.
Oh, speaking of, we do have our new John Store. Yeah, so check that out. We have links on just about everywhere. We'll have them on the show notes as well, with t-shirts.
And Sandy Thief got a John shirt, right?
Yes, she got her John shirt. I sent it to her.
She was really being real polite, because she could have got like two. Didn't she win both the contests?
Well, Antoinette also did, and Fronette on Twitter. So I'll have to get that together too and find out which one she would like.
What she want.
Mm-hmm. But I saw this great article. It was in Blavity, called 6 Digital Media Trends That Are Going to Shake Up Marketing Forever. And I thought, since, you know, that's the biz we're both in, it will be a good, interesting one to go through.
Let's listen.
So one they talked about was the consumerization of media and influencers. So they mentioned this body scrub company called Frank Body, which was one of the first brands to capitalize on Instagram fame. With sales of roughly $20 million in 2015, the brand has grown rapidly thanks to influencers and the consumerization of media. So if you look at their hashtag on Instagram, for example, they pay people to post. So this girl, Jen Seltzer, I think you mentioned her to me before.
Yeah, yeah.
So she gets $20,000 for a product placement ad on Twitter or Instagram.
Hey,
she had about 6 million followers on Instagram. Today she has 8.2 million, and she's charging $50,000 per Instagram post now.
Wow.
Amazing.
$50,000 for an Instagram post? Fuck me, man. That's a... I'm doing the wrong fucking business or something.
And then they go into, but this is just the beginning, Thunderclap.
Yeah.
Is a social media platform that allows people to sign in up in advance and share a unified message at a specific time. I mentioned this to you like last week or 2 weeks ago. I've used it for several campaigns before. It's amazing. Really, like in terms of like having a direct influence and reach, I haven't seen a tool that works as effectively as this if you have really good ground game in the beginning. It's really like unbelievable. I've been recommending all my clients to use it. I'm like, nope, definitely use this. It's really good. Anyways, in October 2015, a project called Phone Blocks generated a reach of more than 381 million with supporters like Elijah Woods signing up for the campaign. Because that's what happened. If you get a few good high-ticket people that sign up for the Thunderclap, it's like they send it from all their accounts. It's amazing. Anyways, so users of the Thunderclap don't currently get compensated for their tweets, but they're willing to bet that it's coming.
Yeah.
People would get paid to get more people to sign up via Thunderclap.
And not just paid, but they'll do an MLM, multi-level marketing, right?
Yep. So you get more people below you, da-da-da.
Yeah. Perfect.
So bots are – the second thing is bots are a media opportunity for brands. So they're just talking about people that are using bots right now to do advertising, and they're going to continue to do that.
What do you mean? You mean like auto-tweets, auto –
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So that's interesting. Number three, how stories will evolve content consumption. Go ahead.
Marketing automation, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a the company I work
which
for.
Which in some way Thunderclap is also, so that's
it
interesting.
It is, to form of it. But we're looking at a couple of different ones, and there's one that integrates social and, you know, email and all kinds of shit. And it's like they have like a waterfall tree, like, you know, if this, then that, click here, click there. Mm-hmm. If they do this, so many weeks, do that. You get a message there, a hard sell, a medium sell, all that shit. And the setup was unbelievable. But the price point, oh my fucking God.
Hi.
Well, and they do it by like the number of contacts and the number of emails and all this stuff. But oh man alive. You know, because the company I work for is kind of like, in the Walmart vein of like price points. So like I went through the whole thing. I'm like, this is amazing. How much is it? Oh my Jesus.
Oh, we can't spend that.
Sorry.
We're not generating that much.
No, I did the math on a per user basis. Yeah, like it broke down to like how much per user? No fucking way.
Yeah.
Can't do it. No way.
So how stories will evolve content consumption. So they're talking about how Facebook changed the way we found our news, Twitter changed the way news broke, and Snapchat and Instagram are currently fighting to determine what's the best way for a new generation to consume it. So they're talking about Snapchatting, the stories thing where you can put multiple things together.
Right.
Number four, more free time equals more media consumption. So just in just a few years, the idea of autonomous vehicles have gone from a futuristic dream to a realistic and disruptive product, regardless of who you think is going to come out with the industry's leader in the race towards the first fully autonomous and safe vehicle. It's going to have an impact on media. So we're talking about just having that time you used to spend driving or doing whatever.
Right.
Number five, the rise of vertical video content. Snapchat's success with vertical video content has resulted in the rise of vertical video content, which was hilarious because it used to be like, how dare you not record in landscape, like people did videos about that. Now it's like, wait, no.
You're embarrassing that you're doing it that way.
Yeah, and now it's like, nope, we have actual things that you need to do that for. Snapchat filters, you know, I've been making custom filters for the Revive Love Tour, and the spec is vertical because that's the only way you can do it in Snapchat. So the actual template I have to make for the filters. Yeah, yeah. Crazy.
You're right.
Which I have to say, it's been really fun and cool thing to do and play around with the Snapchat filters, geo filters. It's pretty cool.
Kind of bummed we can't do that.
I know. I'm totally bummed. I'm gonna tag them on Twitter.
International.
See what
Snapchat
the hell. Be like, come on, guys.
Come on, Snapchat.
Hook it up, man. Number six, big media begins to niche down. Did you know there's a magazine for just about anything from sheep and pigs to technology and boats? Actually, Drew, I think you do know that.
I do.
Digestive diseases. Here's looking at you. over time, magazine sales has plummeted, but niche magazines continue to die, but niche website opportunities arise. So they're just talking about how that's going to be a new trend too. It's kind of like moving magazines into digital format and how those niche ones are starting to explode.
You're making fun of Journal of Digestive Diseases, which was a product that I worked for at one point.
Yes.
But a client I sold was Reed Business Information Systems, and they had thousands of these ridiculous, just every little fucking I can't even describe the industry magazines they had, but it was like ball bearing machine shop worker.
Yeah, didn't they have one just for POS systems or something?
The Journal of Electronic Funds
Transfer. Sounds
electronic
horrible.
Funds transactions.
The sad thing is
they had
Somebody has to edit that magazine.
Listen.
That's what I always think about. There's somebody that has to edit that.
Yeah, and one of our employees did. That we did all the work for that.
Sounds
one.
Horrible.
But the electronic
They didn't go to journalism school for that.
The Electronic Funds Transaction Association, whatever it was, magazine, had a big gala in Las Vegas, and MasterCard would have a fucking literally this huge fucking party with they had a Moroccan night with camels and shit, shots of tequila. It was literally they spent money. Because there's money to be made. It's all that, what do you call it, residual income, right? Where you're making a fraction of the fucking transaction. It is multi-level marketing because Visa makes some money and they share that money with somebody who makes the equipment, who sells or rents the equipment to somebody who goes and sells that equipment to the store that uses it.
Right.
And the store gets some sort of fraction of a fraction. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's business, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But they always had big parties. They had really good – always in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Fucking, that was always the – I think you told about John, the one kid whose dad was I don't want to go. It's been a weekend, blah, 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 blah.
I should at least get 2 days off. Dude, you're going to be fucking getting shit.
Oh, my God. It was so fun.
And you're complaining? Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, my God. We're in a stretch. We're in a stretch Hummer with a fucking stripper pole shots of Patron.
You sound
crazy. He's up $300 to the table. I'm like, is your dad complaining now? Is your dad going to call me now? What about now? That's too much.
Hilarious.
So, you know how we always, we don't watch it as much anymore, but we used to watch a lot of Alex Trebek and Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And Trebek was kind of salty sometimes.
Sometimes. He's gotten more and more ornery as the years have gone.
Yeah, but weird
and
things.
And I will say that non-mustached Trebek seems to be a bigger asshole than mustached Trebek.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll say that too.
And you'd have a question, that's the Western Horned Ornithopologus. How do you not know that? You get real
And it's you have the answers on the card, dude. Don't be a dick.
So he's always a little bit testy, but this is a new low for Alex. We're going to let it go in his words.
Favorite type of music is something I've never heard of, but it doesn't sound like fun.
I think it's very fun. It's called Nerdcore Hip Hop. It's
Nerdcore
Hip Hop. Yes. It's people who identify as nerdy, rapping about the things they love, video games, science fiction, having a hard time meeting romantic partners, It's really catchy and fun.
Losers, in other words.
Yo. Losers.
Wow.
Alex. Come on.
For shame. What a dick.
My name is Classic with an I and a little dick hanging off the C that bends around and f*** the L out of the A-S-S.
Mm-hmm. Keep it classy, Alex.
Keep it classy, Alex.
Keep it classy.
What a dick.
He's Canadian,
That's all I needed to know, really.
Salty.
So I heard about this thing that James Corden, he has a lot of singing and stuff on his show, but there was a Subway singer, Mike Young, who was singing Unchained Melody in the Subway, and it went viral last week, turning him kind of into internet sensation. And so James Corden invited him on his show to sing on the show live. So have you heard the original?
I have not.
Okay, so we'll play that first. This is Mike Young.
Is it the Subway?
Yes.
Whoa.
Are you still mine? I need your love. I need your love.
Okay, so that was him in the subway, and it went viral. Somebody was just, like, recording it. Somebody there knew you mentioned the subway. Yeah. It's sometimes, I mean, most of the time, I love street subway performers myself.
Honest to God.
So great.
I would say if I don't have somewhere to go, more out of often, I'll just stay there for like 5 minutes. I mean, like, let me just chill for a minute. It's worth it.
So he came on, he went on the late show, James Corden.
Now, speaking of the internet, I don't know if you saw this. This is something that got me so excited over the weekend. I don't know if you've seen this video, but it's
sorry, I'm
going to
come forward because we've already seen that part. So here's him singing.
On James' show.
Yeah.
iTunes, dude. He fucking killed it.
Yeah.
He killed it, dude.
Wow. That's so awesome. So shout out to him, to Mike Young, and it's fucking awesome that James gave him a little opportunity.
And that, he hit it out the park at that.
So hit it out the park. Good Lord. That was amazing.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Love, love, love.
So we switched him out to some white nonsense.
Whoa.
Have you seen this forgiveness image running out there with... I don't know. First, there was an image of a, like, you know, those little, like, stick figure men. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And there was one image. I think it's a bumper sticker somebody had out there. And it was a Confederate flag stick figure man kicking a rainbow, ostensibly LGBTQ stick figure in the gut. Like, it's a bumper sticker. And some white gays, for lack of a better term, to call them, thought that they would put this image out and say it's time for forgiveness. When they go low, we go high. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness. Trans Advocate was who put it out there. I just... What is this? Can you explain this to me? I'm really trying to understand. I was in a thread. Somebody was talking about it. Somebody had posted and a bunch of black people were like, this is some nonsense. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And this one dude goes, leave it up to you to bring race into it. And I said, "What? So LGBTQ folks of color don't exist? I just want to understand what you're talking about right now. Bringing race into it. It's so like, you, even his comment, he didn't even like fathom like the way his comment was just like, when I say gay, I mean white gay. Like completely, fully ensconced in the erasure and like didn't even like, I said it twice and he was like, well, that's not what I was saying, but it was what you were saying, bitch. Yes, it was what you were saying. It was exactly what you were saying. When you're talking about LGBTQ issues and you say don't bring race into it, that's exactly what you're saying. But good luck with that. Yeah. Good luck. Forgiveness. Oh, my God. Let's move on.
I just, speaking of like, there's a couple of stories like I just like, sometimes we read things and it's like, I clearly like, okay. And then there's like, that just, I don't know what. So Yelp for cops. Chicago man creates an app for rating police interactions. And I thought there was like, we watch police and rate cops. I thought these things existed, maybe not. As a black man in Chicago and the son of law enforcement, Channing Harris said he's seen both the good and the bad sides of police work. That's why the Near West Side native is developing a Yelp-like smartphone app that allows city residents to report any interactions, good or bad, with police. The app and website called Excuse Me Officer will not only allow residents to report police interactions, but also provide an interactive map of reports filed near the user's location. So they're hoping for some transparency, and he's got some seed funding, and some judges loved it, and they're going to have a launch event where the police and community can get together and talk, and he's going to get ads from lawyers on the side if you do have a negative reaction. But it started with a good friend of his got beat down by an off-duty cop, like really bad, like ruptured spleen kind of bad, and so thought, I'll make this app.
And what do you think of the app?
It's interesting that he's framing it, the good and the bad, Yelp, good and bad. I think that the police are adamantly opposed to just about anything in terms of like quantifying and qualifying their ability and skill at the job. You know, it's like the DOJ
deliberately.
The DOJ 20 years ago said like you need to start counting how many people you kill. Like we're not gonna do that.
Not really interesting.
Pass.
Why should we have to do
pass.
That? We don't count them here.
How many people did you kill? More than a few.
I'm closing tonight. They sound like you when I first met you.
I'm closing tonight.
I'm closing tonight.
How many people did you kill? I gotta go.
The PM shift.
It's shift change. The PM shift. Is it my time to get donuts?
I'm on the bar tonight.
I think I gotta make the coffee.
Let me
go.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
So see what you. Time? You...
How many have you killed?
How many have you
today?
Killed exactly?
Is this a what
this
day
month?
Is this?
Yesterday?
Is this a Tuesday?
This morning? Anything? Bueller? No. Yeah, for sure.
You mean like in the city limits?
I think it's like a good and a bad thing. I think it's interesting because I do think like when we can add quantifiable, numbers to things, that does help. It's one of those things where we get a wedge and we're able to utilize data in different ways. But I also think that there's a level of like complacency to like admitting that we can't even trust them to really do anything at this point, including like even just monitor like the most rudimentary of complaints against them. But there is also this level of like intimidation when it comes to reporting. I think this allows at least some sort of distance between
them.
Yeah,
but beyond the intimidation, there's like, I feel like the data you're talking about, like qualitative data as to like your ability to perform this job. Right. And there's probably a lot of it. Like think of a doctor, right? Like 20, 30 years ago, we had the same problem. Doctors could be really fucking horrible. They had no bedside manner. They could be like messing up and making mistakes. And like they got a central deposit and a repository and like the AMA, and they fucking keep this shit. And like you've got banned in this state, you can't work in that state. Like they started doing their fucking own like monitoring and shit because it's like, well, we can't allow them to go out and be killing people. Like this is no longer acceptable to allow our doctors to be fuck ass and like us not to monitor our own shit. But even independent of that, people, the marketplace was like, you know what? I want to know more about this doctor. I want to know what other people have said about this doctor. So there's like Yelp-like apps for doctors, and you know they did this and it was good, and they did that and it was bad. But like the marketplace had to want that and need that. Like I'm not saying that the marketplace doesn't want that, but like the cops are so opposed to it that like even good stuff, like I don't know. It just it seems like A, they just don't want any data at all. Mm-hmm. B, any data that like could get out, they're gonna fucking like just obfuscate and fucking like do whatever it is to it. And then C, I don't think there's enough people yet wanting that data to be used and leveraged in a decision about the police that work in their communities.
Mm.
Yet.
Yes.
You know? And because like really like I'm not saying like do you know or do you have any decision on that? Like literally like I asked that like not in a disrespectful way, like how are the police hired and what decisions are made and who are they? And is there a review? Is there a civilian review? Do you evaluate their contracts? Do they have employment that's up to, you know, this or that? And can citizens come and sit and discuss this? Like, I'm not saying like we should all be knowing.
We should all be knowing that. I mean, I think that that's this whole, like one of the big things that came out recently, the DOJ is going to start tracking use of force policies around the country. And like, those are some basic things that we, I think as a populace have allowed to get away from us, you know, as a general public, we've allowed things like use of force policies to not even be in not just discussion, but in common knowledge. So we don't know what is okay in our municipalities. And so when things happen, we're shocked by them. And then when there's no charges filed, we look and we see that the laws back up this aberrant behavior. So, you know, there's a level of that. It's, you know, I shout out Sam Sway all the time. Shout out to you, Sam, because he is a data, you know, analysis genius. And he really is able to put these incredibly large systems into quantitative and qualitative numerical data points so that we can really understand what's going on a fundamental level. And so, yeah, I mean, I think all of those things are super important. I mean, that's why there's so much work being done policy wise right now, because that's the low hanging fruit, quite frankly. And truthfully, it's not very low. It's actually quite high, but it's the lowest we can reach right now with the limited power that we have. So the other piece of that is building more power so that we can do larger things. But yeah, there's a lot to do. Anyways, one thing I did see too is 2,000 Seattle teachers wore Black Lives Matter shirts to class in Seattle to call for racial equity in education. Schools across the district held Black Lives Matter at school rallies before class began for the day. Students, parents, and teachers wore stickers and buttons emblazoned with Black Lives Matter slogan. The purpose of the day was to affirm that Black Lives Matter in the public schools, according to organizers who are members of Social Equality Educators, a group of educators within the Seattle Teachers Union. So it's a subsect of the Teachers Union there. Teachers also wanted to show their support for John Muir Elementary School, which had its Black Men United to Change the Narrative event canceled last month after receiving a threat over teachers' plans to wear Black Lives Matter shirts. Before school started Wednesday at Chief Stealth International High School, dozens of educators and students gathered outside the building and held up banners and signs. About 60 Chief Stealth educators had ordered the shirts beforehand. Some of the shirts said Black Lives Matter and Say Her Name, references Sandra Bland, a Black woman who died in police custody. And those shirts had an image of a fist, and others wore shirts that said Black Lives Matter and We Stand Together with an image of a tree. So,
wow.
Pretty cool.
We're in the pipe. Bye.
Oh, Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle. They're trying to do something. They have another one planned for that following Wednesday evening, where activist artists, including Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Kimia Dawson, will perform and speak about racial equity. Seattle Seahawks defensive lineman Michael Bennett is also expected to attend, and it's pretty cool.
Can we just give credit to maybe like Marissa and Ijeoma? I'm sure they had something to do with
it. Quite. Definitely. They're making some strides out there. Shout out to both of those lovely ladies.
I don't want nobody
Woo!
Fucking with me in these streets. Same children. I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets. Cause I don't want nobody
Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that shit.
Well, what?
Actually, we got to
put the game clock at 420.
Smoke weed every day.
Got a bunch of weed news.
Yeah, so Stoner Nation is the Stoner Nation. THA Stoner Nation is like my favorite Twitter. My favorite Twitter handle. They just have funny stoner shit up all the time. It's really funny. So the other day they had one up, said, "This is going to be me in 40 years with a crying emoji." And it's a dude. And I played it and I literally almost peed myself. I played it for you. We were cracking up. So I thought it would be funny to play it on the show.
Let's do it.
You ready?
Yeah. And this Uber shit again, man. Trying to get to the fucking, where am I headed? Oh, to the restaurant for breakfast. I didn't know where the fuck I was going. Say, man, you mind if I smoke?
Nah, man, you good.
Thank you, dude. Appreciate it.
The dude's taking the biggest hit ever off of a electronic marijuana cigarette.
Man, what the fuck is you smoking in my car, man?
Wait, man, you said I could smoke.
Smoke what?
Smoke medicine.
What the fuck is medicine?
Medicine is medicine. What you mean, what is medicine? Medicine that gets
on
my...
No, man, no. No.
Dude, you a fucking Uber driver, man. Drive the fucking car.
That smells like marijuana.
It is marijuana.
I didn't say you could smoke that shit in my motherfucking car.
Oh, man, it took another huge hit. He blew the whole thing out right in his face. Out,
man. I asked you if I could smoke.
Get the fuck out.
Man, y'all motherfuckers is crazy. Let me out this motherfucker.
Get the fuck out.
You motherfucker Uber driver. Drive the car.
Drive the fucking Uber.
Drive the car.
I asked you.
Good Lord.
He blew the biggest hit after he said, no, you can't do it in here.
Can I
like,
smoke?
Huge.
He just does it.
Hilarious. I'm just cracking up. You the fucking Uber driver. Drive the fucking
just
car.
Just like literally though, like, can I smoke? And they're like, holy fuck.
I
like,
didn't
dude.
Say you could hotbox the car. Jesus. Roll the Lord. Fucking window down. Something.
That was like the exact opposite of discreet. It's like the fucking biggest cloud I've ever seen. Like, damn, dude. This, you know, I was going to read the article, but it's like kind of boring. There's no point to it, but it's from Salon. It was about whether or not, big marijuana is becoming, you know, like the big tobacco.
Oh, yes.
And, worried about, marketing to kids, Joe Camel style and shit. And I mean, this is all like speculation. There's nothing there. In this article, it's kind of stupid, but I don't know.
Do you think it will?
I mean,
I think
cat is a little bit out of the bag with regards to the ability for people to, because it's been black market for so long, there's too many people that know how and can grow it and make money on the black market that I think even if it was like really like big tobacco exists because nobody really grows tobacco and fucking like rolls their own cigarettes and
right.
shit. That's just like you can't do that.
Well, you have to process it.
Yeah, the scale that it takes now is just like no, fuck that shit. But you can do that with weed. People they have been doing that with weed for a long time.
Right, it's been like the main way to get it.
Yeah,
so,
how are you
going to
get that cat back into the bag? Yeah. I don't know. When I think about is big marijuana like possible? Like I guess, but like on some level, I think that it's not as likely.
Hmm.
Not as likely.
Yeah.
You chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on your father. You chuck it on your brother and you chuck it on your sister. You chuck it on that one and you chuck it on me. Bad boys, bad boys.
So, FBI Director James Comey saying that stats don't back up claims about police shooting epidemic. And so I guess he's been on a crusade, and he's now saying, James Comey, that told a gathering of police chiefs that people who think there's an epidemic of police shooting of black people, they're not really well informed. He touched on a theme he has pursued for more than a year, trying to get police to embrace the need to report statistics on officer-involved shootings. Better numbers, Comey argued, would help the nation understand whether there is a real epidemic of police killings of black men, or if the advent of viral videos shared in social media are giving the impression that there are more lethal confrontations between police and minorities. And like, oops, over there. On some level, like, that entire argument bothers me. It's like, well, you know, there's not more rape. There's just more reporting of rape now.
Like what?
Like any rape is okay? I'm sorry. Like
none of it should be acceptable.
Yeah, like well, there's not really, like so he's really, his argument is the 800 and some odd plus black men that were killed, you know, or 1,000 plus people that were killed, that's normal. That happens every year.
Yeah.
And it's just also, that we're seeing
it
because of
more. And also
yeah.
It's just like how every other civilized country can manage to carry out law and order without killing people. It's just baffling to me.
Yeah, that's not. I'm not here for that.
No.
FBI director, you fucker.
Yeah, and then Deborah Danner, who
say her name.
Say her name, indeed. A 66-year-old black woman who was killed in the Bronx last week by a police sergeant in her own apartment.
Yeah, and I don't know why you and I talked about this privately, but something about. And no death is any, you know, they're all fucking atrocious. But having in your own home when you're having, you know, like a need, mental health or otherwise, and you get killed in your own home, to me that's just the height of egregious. You know, there's just, that to me is the worst of the worst. They're all fucking horrible.
And
they're
like
all fucking horrible.
I mean, I just
in
like
your own home.
They
I can't get over that.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't the first time they've been at the residence. They know that she has mental health issues, and it's just like, I'm just sick of it all. I'm sick of all of it. I'm sick of them trying to justify any of it. I'm sick of, you know, I did a whole Twitter thread about, you know, the issues in the in mental health, generally speaking, and how racist it is. And, you know, I've been talking with a lot of mental health professionals. I've talked to them in so many cities, and the same thing comes back to me, which is, you know, that we're being, you know, underdiagnosed, not diagnosed, sometimes overdiagnosed, just not being accounted for in all mental health, in all areas of mental health, including the clinical side of things, which does not take into account the unique ways in which trauma, anxiety, all sorts of mental health ailments show up in black bodies different than they do in others. We have a historical context of our show of emotions leading to severe punishment. Whether we go back to slavery and talk about showing pain, you know, we were meant to endure atrocities happily, right? We weren't supposed to show that anything was wrong and forget about showing joy.
That's still manifest now. Doctors still think black patients fucking feel pain less.
I'm aware.
Now.
So all of these things, like, we have a historical, you know, context of us, of our every emotion being vilified, dissected, criminalized, all of these things. And so, of course, all of these things show up completely differently on us because they've had to. And I don't even know. So half the time, not even half the time, more than half the time, half of people that the police kill are in mental health crisis. So let's just start with that statistic first, 50%. Secondarily to that, black people, when they are in mental health crisis because of the racist systems that we're talking about, they come in contact with the police. They don't get to come in contact with a social worker or a therapist or a psychiatrist. It's the police that are intervening. And we already know where that leads with, you know, quote unquote erratic behavior. And it's all of these. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, did the either the strong black woman or the angry black woman stereotype contribute to, these negative interactions with police. And I was like, well, all stereotypes do, because what happens is once a stereotype is believed and applied to a group of people, any interaction loses its individuality, right? So they never see the person as an individual, versus when they're interacting with white people who don't have these large branded stereotypes applied to them in this way, they can take data in as an individual person, not as it compares to what they expect of a race.
And just not just the data, think of the implicit instant every fucking decision from like the cops. Like I can have that same interaction in my home, and they're not gonna see me as a threat. I can be twice as loud, twice as big, twice as angry, and it'll still be like, okay, calm down, let's, you know, it's okay, don't hurt yourself, literally,
right?
You know, whereas all they see is black, and it's like, you know, pull out the fucking guns.
And he had a stun gun on him.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not saying that like you're talking about mental health, even like when we're talking about actual delivery of services. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But think about how supremacy impacts now the education of therapists.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Right. So now there's a paucity of people that even understand, yep, the daily life.
Yep.
And then to give services, it's just, and that implicit bias comes into that. That
of course, comes into all of that, and then you have people unable to diagnose, unable to actually like make headway and actually treat correctly.
And there's even now evidence, not evidence, but it's mounting. They've shown that in a lot of settings where there's like self-report kind of stuff, the things that when a black person is in an affinity with the doctor or therapist, that they'll share, or they'll share in a way that culture is understood that they won't share in the same way when they don't have affinity with the person they're talking to, right? Like, just like, not code switching, but just like the way you talk and saying things, the comfort level you have. It's just like, there's like mounting evidence that like there really needs to be, not to be representation, but like it's, you know, it's critical. But who fucked up this week?
We have to do the music. Hopefully we get stuck. You can't stop.
It always does. Oh, wait. Is it going to? It may be.
This week we have to discuss Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, then of course RBG. Was she apologizing for her?
Her comments. She made some remarks last week Monday to Yahoo News' Katie Couric about Colin Kaepernick's kneeling during playing the national anthem. She also
spoke about Trump too, I thought.
She said, quote, "I think it's really dumb of them." She said that about Trump, but this is not what I'm talking. I don't give a shit what she said about Trump. "I think it's really dumb of them. Would I arrest them for doing it? No. I think it's dumb and disrespectful. If they want to be stupid, there's no law that should be preventive. If they want to be arrogant, there's no law that prevents them from that. What I would do is strongly take issue with the point of view that they are expressing when they do that." Mm-hmm. Colin, of course, had a few words himself. He just said that he was disappointed.
She's a Supreme
Court. She said it's disappointing to hear a Supreme Court. It's disappointing to hear a Supreme Court justice call a protest against injustices and oppression dumb and stupid in reference to players doing that. I was reading an article and it refers to a white critique of black protests and how they try to delegitimize it by calling it idiotic, dumb, stupid, things of that nature, so they can sidestep the real issue. As I was reading that, I saw more and more truth how this has been approached by people in power, and white people in power in particular. All right, Colin. Coming through with the theories.
With the education.
I like it. Somebody's, you know, he got that new Muslim girlfriend. I think she'd been getting on him. Cut to a few days later. Mm-hmm. Justice Ruth, this is the apology part, of course. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is walking back comments she made earlier this week about San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick's decision not to stand during the national anthem. According to Kaepernick, blah, blah, blah. And so on Friday, she appeared contrite about her remarks. Quote, "Barely aware of the incident or its purpose, my comments were inappropriately dismissive and harsh," she said. "I should have declined to respond."
Yeah, that's right. Silence is always an option.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do nothing, learn from Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg that, like, shh is always a thing. You can just, like, mm-hmm. And I had to, myself, I had to learn that.
Yeah, Slate's Mark Joseph Stern wrote a thoughtful column about the mishap and why many progressives who otherwise support people of color struggle for equality still have a hard time standing in complete solidarity with them. Quote, what would emerge from the controversy is a justice, admirable but imperfect like any icon, who argues passionately for minority rights in the abstract without fully understanding how each new generation puts those principles into practice, he wrote. He pointed to rulings in which Ginsburg has stood as a staunch defender of voting rights for black people. One can disagree without being disagreeable, wrote the founders of a Tumblr's page dedicated to notorious RGB. Regarding her recent remarks about athletes' peaceful protests, we respectfully disagree. So,
yeah. And she.
So what would you give an apology? It wasn't really an apology.
No, it wasn't an apology. I
have to say.
Like a zero. She didn't say I'm sorry to Colin at all.
Anything.
She just said I shouldn't have spoke.
Right.
Right. And even the person that was defending, it's like, well, you can disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable.
And
which
also,
is like,
this thing is like, I should have declined a response. You should have, but here's the thing. You in your own estimation have said you didn't know anything about it, but yet you felt very comfortable having a comment to a news
opinion.
Organization.
Yeah,
like,
sure
it
did.
Wasn't a casual conversation.
And that's like, dumb. Call him stupid. It wasn't
like,
just any old
you
comment.
Had a very strong opinion about yeah. something you admit you
sure
knew
did.
Nothing about. Because what did you hear about it?
And no, because of supremacy. That's why.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, you don't get off the hook saying, like, I shouldn't have said shit because I didn't know shit. Yeah, you should think about why you thought you should say shit because you didn't know shit.
You know those in People Magazine, I think it used to do like 5 minutes ago, now and out. Right, like they do a juxtaposition, like what was out, what's 5 minutes ago, and what's now.
Yeah.
So now is kneeling for the anthem. 5 minutes ago, I don't know what is
shutting down Bernie Sanders speeches or some shit.
Out would be black brunch, right? So the thing that gets white folk like in their feels at like the water cooler.
What's coming next?
I don't know. Protest wise, it's like you know, you guys, it's gonna be something. Kneeling in the anthem. My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know nothing about it, but here I'm gonna. Fucking call you stupid. Okay. You do you, man. Ma'am, I should say.
Yes.
Ma'am. Where's my... That's my old GOP clown car.
Actually, there's so much
it's
shit under here.
It's a GOP clown car.
Oh, the girls.
I know.
No. So there's so much shit here. I don't even think we have time to do all of it. So we'll just like cherry pick. One is that this union is building a wall of taco trucks outside the Trump's Las Vegas hotel, which I think is fucking hilarious.
Dude, just get taco trucks circling the fucking thing all
day. It's amazing. It's a culinary union and other groups are doing the stunt. They're going to build it all the way around a couple miles from UNLV. At least 5 taco trucks outside the hotel and building a wall of taco trucks outside. It's really fucking hilarious.
Yes.
Expert level trolling. The other thing I saw was that Adrian Gonzalez, who's with the Dodgers, refused to stay at Trump Hotel in Chicago.
Good for Adrian.
Came there, you know.
Trump Hotel.
And was
no.
like, nope.
Nope.
Not. He's like, I didn't stay there. I had my reasons. Shade.
Yeah. And then, you know, they had their debate. And then, like, I guess not even 48 hours later, they're at this Al Smith dinner, which is supposed to be some sort of, like, historical.
It's a
like,
Catholic thing.
Yeah. But, boy, oh, boy, they couldn't let it go. The anger and bitterness, I guess, carried over to this.
Come on. Of course it did. The guy's an dinner. Asshole. He literally brought a bunch of women who accused her husband of raping and whatchamacalling them in a room with their daughter.
Yeah. So neither candidate seemed at ease or performed particularly well. But in the end, Trump seemed to come across as the more unacceptable and appeared to misjudge the tone of the evening worse than Clinton. that's your headline. Like, you came off as more unacceptable.
Uh-oh. Get off that page. There's a real big spoiler on there.
On what?
On that page that I just clicked on to look at that Al Smith dinner thing. You shouldn't go on anything, actually.
Okay. What was up there? What spoiler? Okay.
It's a spoiler. I don't want to tell you what it is. Anyways, yeah. That whole thing seemed weird, and it's weird that they had it on TV too. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I think it's entertainment. They're just trying to fucking.
I guess it's edutainment.
They're
going to be in a room together. Got it.
No, but like, it's just like when it was 17 GOP fucking nominees, and they had like the little kids fucking debate dinner. It was like okay, cute. Like Trump is entertaining. Now it's like, you know, just stop. Like
I
y'all
can't.
Are fucking.
I'm not watching any of the things.
Yeah, it's too much.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey, hey,
hey,
hey,
hey. White people.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
So what, I didn't see this in time, but you're saying here.
Oh, this shit is hilarious.
I gotta pull it up.
Yeah, you have to play it. It's a video.
It's a video, okay. The alt-right. You've heard of alternative rock. Now hear the alternative right. You'll never like music. Yeah. Oh my God, alt
play
right.
It. It's
oh,
so
shit.
Good. It's so good.
Nowadays everybody got a trigger. Nowadays everybody is so bitter. Nowadays everybody
white
got
noise.
A trigger. Why is it offensive if I say?
Hey Eric, what are you listening to?
White noise.
What's white noise?
It's only the best album ever from the people who brought you pure grunge, the best of alt rock. This. Is White Noise the best of the alt-right?
Alt-right, isn't that, that fringe white nationalist movement online?
It's not that fringe, okay? And it's not just memes, it's music too. Listen.
I trust cops. They're nice to me and keep me safe. When I see them, it puts a smile on my face.
Whoa, is this a thing?
Alt-right is what everyone's jamming to
Colin
now.
Kaepernick
ever since the head
it.
Of Breitbart started managing Donald Trump's campaign. Hey, even Hillary Clinton says we're up and coming. Experience the power.
White power by the whitest
How
stripes.
How come black people can say black power, but when I say white power, people get mad?
Hillary.
This is called Killary. The actually.
Wow, this sounds pretty extreme.
You have no idea. You can get White Noise on two CDs or two cassettes for only $19.39. So order it
Yo,
now. And
the $19.39 symbol spun and had a swastika.
Wait, what?
Check it out.
Women and Children Laugh, Mr. Alex Jones, Shilling in the Name by Rage Comics. Fuck the PC police. You're my border wall. I got 99 problems. Reverse racism is real by 4chan blondes. Feminism bad is what they're playing tonight. It's raining, not all men.
I don't know. This is a little too aggressive for my taste. I don't think I'm
comfortable. You're right. It is awesome. Listen to the album that the libtards over at Rolling Stone gave only one star. But Martin Shkreli gave 5 stars because he believes in ethics and music journalism.
Martin
Listen to the
Shkreli.
Testimonials we got from Reddit.
White Noise is great, and it's not fake and gay like all those other albums.
But it's
this
not
album
racist,
won't
but...
ruin your childhood like that all-female Ghostbusters movie.
Hey, this is Stephen Jenkins, and White Noise is the best alternative rock record of a generation.
Alternative right.
What's that?
It's like a white nationalist movement.
Like Nazis?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wait,
order now. And we'll send and Leslie Jones's home address.
We will?
Yeah, huh?
I'm not comfortable with this, Eric.
That's okay, Julie. It's not for you. It's for us. So what are you waiting for? Call the number on your screen and order White Noise now. And make America rock again.
Call now for this amazing album. It fits perfectly in a gift basket of deplorables. Must be a U.S. citizen to purchase. And a man. And white. No Jews.
Wow.
Yeah.
Alt-right rock.
Yep.
Infomercial.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I had a quick hidden history story, which talks about the hidden Haitian history that during the Holocaust, Haiti issued passports to Jewish families to leave Germany. According to an article called Haiti History 101, Haiti's role in saving Jewish families during the Holocaust, most people aren't aware of it, and even today only a handful of historians may know this, but Haiti was indeed responsible for saving about 70 Jewish families, an estimated total of up to 300 lives during the horrendous Holocaust that occurred during the 1930s, in which Jewish families were hunted down in Europe. 300 lives. The number is certainly not as high as the number of Jewish families that Schindler has saved, but a human life is a human life. And it said, according to documents furnished by, Jewish dating back to December 5th, 1939, 250 to 300 individuals fleeing Nazi Germany had come to Haiti.
Wow.
So, hidden history for you there.
Hidden history.
Hidden history. And then, oh gosh, I don't have the music for Dope Black Girls either. That's terrible. Anyways, Hillary Clinton's campaign for Dope Black Girls has more black women than any presidential campaign in history.
I imagine that wasn't hard to do, but good for
I'm
her.
I'm sure it was. It's a very low bar, but
yeah.
Still.
So that's
pretty,
two? It has two?
It was definitely more than
I'm
two.
Kidding. But that's good.
Yeah. So it's a smart move on her part. And obviously, I mean, they're dope as fuck. So, that's pretty sweet. To go through Denise Horn, who is the director of African American media for the campaign, Bryn Craig, who is the National Deputy Secretary of State Campaigns and Political Engagement, Zerlina Maxwell, big up to Zerlina, progressive media director, Naisha Blandon, who is Deputy Women's Vote Director, Ida Woldenmichael, who is the senior designer, Maya Harris, who's the senior policy advisor, and all of those women are part high up in the Clinton campaign.
Nice.
Yes. So, yes, I saw this thing. I thought it was kind of cool. The Sounds of Black Lives Matter. So we talked about Solange's album, Seat at the Table, which is fucking amazing and just beautiful, beautiful. This article just talks a little bit about how a lot of music of late, and this is something Mr. B talks about all the time, Harry Belafonte, about how the music will mirror, you know, the times when the movement is strong, the music is strong, kind of thing. And so, you know, just talking about Seat at the Table, D'Angelo's Black Messiah, obviously To Pimp a Butterfly, Lemonade. I mean, we've had so much that, you know, you can see reflected in the music. And so they put together a music playlist that is on this Black Lives Matter playlist, which I thought was pretty cool.
It's very cool.
So they have like Sandra Smile, Blood Orange. They have Glory, John Legend, and Common. They have The Charade by D'Angelo, Jamila Woods, Black Girl Soldier. Obviously, All Right by Kendrick.
Now, there's definitely a lot of
good songs on there.
You can definitely see the change in the music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
There's definitely more of that. You see that every time there's, you know, protest and different civil rights and actions and movements. You see impact on the pop culture in a variety of ways.
Right.
But I think this movement in particular, our pop culture icons have been black and embracing it. I guess. I don't know if that's more than other times because I haven't been around other times, but, you know. Kind of nice.
Well, it's interesting because it definitely seems like they have had, you know, we've seen black music be, I think people would both say like, oh, it became popular music, but really it just became that black people were able to, you know, themselves take credit for the music that
correct,
they were responsible
correct,
for. If
correct.
I was, you know, just making that
no,
quick distinction.
Bruno Mars was writing for other people, and now he's doing his own music. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, I mean much more fundamentally than
no,
that.
No, I meant that's a micro, right? And I'm not saying he was writing for white people, because he probably wasn't, but no, I hear you. Absolutely. You know,
right.
Access to and ability.
Yeah, it just made me, you see, like, you know, Elvis Presley, for example.
Right.
You know, that was black music put through, you know, a white filter. So I think that as we've seen people be able to, you know, do it differently. So did you want to hear some of the songs? We can play a few of them.
Sure.
All right. So do you want to pick any?
I'll play Kendrick, Pimp a Butterfly.
Well, it doesn't have the whole thing.
I don't know, but play like We Can Be All Right.
Song? Here we go.
See, she's missing by the hundreds.
Everybody checking for us, everybody checking for us.
The camera loves us, Oscar does it.
Everybody checking for us, everybody checking
for us. They want us in the kitchen. Kill our sons with lynching. We get loud about
I love that song. That's Jamila Woods, Black Girl Soldier. And you wanted to hear some music.
It's my life, I had to fight, nigga. It's my life, hard times like, yeah. Bad trips like, yeah. Nazareth, I'm fucked up, homie, you fucked up. But if God got us, then we gon' be alright. And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. On Mac 11, even room with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. With pretty pussy and Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a motherfucking gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone great. Trying to sign my face this all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. Nigga, when our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? Nigga, and we hate po-po. Wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. Nigga, I'm at the preacher's door. My knees getting weak and my gun might blow. But we gon' be alright.
Ooh, that song.
Was Ben Harper on the list?
No, Ben Harper is on the list. I'm trying to play this playlist. You just playing random stuff? What is that?
I was going to say we're going to get our podcast going. That's right.
We're going to get our what?
Me and I'm really whatever going to get the podcast going.
Oh, yeah, that is going to be good.
But that's that same music. It's all good.
When it's the feelings I wear, don't touch my soul. When it's a rhythm I know, don't touch my crown. They see the vision I've found, don't touch what's there. When it's the feelings I when they don't understand what it means to me, but we chose to go where we meant to go. They don't understand what it means to me, but we chose to go where we meant to go. You know this here is my shit, roll the ride, I gave the time, but this here is
anyway, it's a dope playlist. I'll put the link up so folks can check it out. I like the merging of more arts in the movement, personally. I'm here for it. And you were talking something about vegan cheese?
That seems very out of place now.
Why?
I'm just like silly, but it's just...
That's not silly.
I'm
interested in it because, A lot more people are becoming vegans. I know, and it's kind of weird, but whatevs. And I just thought this was really funny, too.
So just there's a Facebook rant. Somebody, obviously not a vegan, was complaining about coconut milk being used to make a cheese-like product and saying it shouldn't be called cheese because
it's not fucking cheese.
Yeah, I'll just read the rant. Cheese. If you're going to be vegan, don't call your vegan cheese cheese because it's not cheese. As a real cheese fan myself, it's annoyed me that Sainsbury have brought out a vegan cheese made with coconuts. Cheese is not made with coconuts. Call it Gary or something. Don't call it cheese because it's not cheese. Just to recap, in case you have forgotten, cheese is nutritious food made mostly from the milk of cows, but also other mammals, including sheep, goat, buffalo, reindeer, camel, and yaks. Around 4,000 years ago, people have started to breed animals and process their milk. That's when the cheese was born. So Sainsbury can F off. Go enjoy your cheeseless life. Don't try to make it a substitute cheese and call it cheese because it's not. And you've decided your way of life is this. It's ridiculous and you use the word cheese. Don't come to my cheese and wine parties if you're going to eat coconut cheese. If you're allergic to cheese, I feel for you. Really, I do. If you're vegan because you've chosen to be and not that you're not allergic, I'm not interested in your views about vegan or cheese and the eating products from animals is bad or blah, 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 blah. For all these reasons everyone knows about and the point and some more and so on. It goes on and on. But so, yeah. They're now calling it Gary. And like when I say they're now calling it Gary, Sainsbury of the Sainsbury rant in here has a product out that is literally called Gary.
Well, there you go. Coconut. Is it popular or is it?
You know, I don't know, but it's a coconut cheese like product that they're calling Gary. I think it's funny that like somebody went all fucking like ranty about it and like Vegan Life magazine picked it up and it went viral and now like, oh yeah, let's call it Gary. It's cute.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Gary.
Poor Gary. Yeah. So I know we talked about the 13th a bit because we saw it and, you know, it was amazing and all of that stuff. But I did see a critique of it that I thought was really interesting, talking specifically about, you know, the fact that it does such a great job of, you know, clearly laying out plainly the film mass incarceration, modern day policing, and mutations of American slavery that are meant to maintain economic, social, political, and legal subjugation of black people to support the white American enterprise, right? And definitely, it's really something amazing. It has, you know, organizers, historians, advocates, scholars, formerly incarcerated people, you know, all sorts of people talking about everything and how we've been caged and confined due to our blackness to quote unquote remain, you know, safe. So one of the film's power is tempered by glaring omission, black women's stories. During neither slavery nor Jim Crow nor the deceptively named war on drugs have black women been immune to the hypercriminality imposed on black people. In 2000, black women and men were incarcerated 6 and 7.5 times the rate of white women and men, respectively. A pivotal moment in the timeline represented by the 13th is Ronald Reagan's ascendance to the presidency in 1981 when he launched his war on drugs, which he manufactured to decimate black communities and later became the foundation for Bill Clinton's 1996 doubly horrible crime bill. But by centering the story of the criminalization squarely on black men, 13th invisibilizes the unique conditions that compound and give way to both cis and transgender black women's experiences in America at the intersections of racial and gender policing. To date, black women are the fastest growing prison population, and this phenomenon can be directly tied to this disgraceful war on drugs that effectively criminalized people suspected of trafficking and using drugs, as well as their partners, children, and parents. Lest we not forget, Alberta Spruill, 57, was killed after New York City police officers broke down her door and threw a concussion grenade into her home while searching for guns and drugs that were not there. 13th briefly mentioned Sharonda Jones, a black woman serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole for a first-time drug offense, but her story is more common than is alluded to in the film. Black women are often swept up into the carceral system, either from being targeted by the war on drugs themselves or for little more than their relationship to partners who are being targeted by the state. Similarly, when conversations about bail reform, the heartbreaking story of Khalif Browder, a young black man who killed himself after being held for 3 years in New York City's Rikers Island for inability to make jail, emerged in the film. Important insights into how black women are affected by the lack of access to fair bail hearings failed to be brought to light. Imagine being held in incarceration while waiting for trial because you can't make bail and being pregnant. Currently, 28 states still enforce shackling laws that require pregnant women to be shackled by the hands, feet, stomach, or all three during childbirth, a practice that has led to stillborn birth defects and maternal mortality. The 13th remembers Reagan as the chief architect of the war on drugs. Many black feminists also remember him as a creator and exploiter of the welfare queen, a mythical black woman who defrauded the government for millions through public assistance. The welfare queen and the conservative lore that surrounded her gave way to massive destabilization of welfare and the criminalization of those on public assistance. You know, we cannot talk about Trayvon Martin and not mention Renisha McBride. We cannot discuss Michael Brown and not mention the name of Sandra Bland. Kayla Moore and Alfred Alongo are equally important to understanding how black people are affected by state violence. And I went on a whole rant about this in regard to the whole situation with Deborah Danner, who we talked about earlier. I'm just tired, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, I guess if you're being, you know, if you're looking at it to be critical, you can, you know, not even if you're just looking at it, you don't have to say to be critical, just look at it. I maybe can see where 13th he was a little bit cishet male-centric, you know, mm-hmm. more so than maybe it could have or needed to be. And I'm not making assumptions, but perhaps the material is more there. It's easier to draw the lines. The numbers are more gaudy, you know. But
I don't think it's any of those
things. I don't know.
I think it's just sexism. I think it's just our society has decided that male stories are more important. And so those are the ones that are going to be told, no matter who, no matter what subject it is. That's the lens that it's going to be, you know, going to be pitched from. And, you know, I the reason why I went on the rant on Twitter was because I just like, it upset me just like knowing that Deborah Danner, you know, this woman gunned down her own home in the midst of a mental health crisis. And, you know, I knew that there weren't going to be any like large mass, you know, calls out across the country to flock to the Bronx to stand for justice for her. No, her name wasn't going to trend. No one was going to, you know, make a big call to action because nobody gives a shit when black women are killed. Like, they really don't care. And we don't care. Like, we don't care. And the omission of the experience of black women from 13th is indicative of that. It's a culture of what we put importance on and what we don't, what moves people to action and what doesn't. And again, it goes back to that conversation we're having about, you know, Robin DiAngelo, which is that, you know, if Ava wants to make an impactful movie, right, that people are moved by, people aren't going to be moved by, I don't know any of the women that were mentioned in the article. They're going to be moved by Kalief Browder. You know, they're going to be moved by these stories that make them feel, you know, they're not going to care about Renisha McBride, but Trayvon's going to speak to them. So I just feel like, you know, it's disheartening because I said in my Twitter rant, I was like, you know, it's sickening for me to know that whatever power I think I have as an organizer disappears the minute I try to center a black woman. It ceases to exist. I actually have no power. I have no reach. I have no ability to actually do very much unless I'm literally calling in personal favors, like one by one, directly calling people and asking them to support something. And when it's a black man and I do the same things, the reach, the reaction, the impact is, you know, measurable. And it's, you know, it sucks. It sucks.
Sorry to hear it.
Yeah. Anyways, I made the misfortune of finally seeing Batman versus Superman.
Why?
So I had this thing where I, like, people have been saying how bad it was, and I was like, it's so bad. Great. I figured I'd watch it on planes because I've been traveling like a ridiculous amount with the Revive Love Tour and flying everywhere. So I was like, I'll watch it on the plane because I was flying Delta a bunch and they give you the free movies or whatever. And that way, if I fall asleep, I don't care. And because I've been taking short flights. So I finally got through the whole fucking bullshit. Oh my God. It was even worse than people said.
People said it was fucking bad. People said it was horrible. No, it was worse than that?
It was like, I can't even describe how bad it was because I kept like shaking my head like, I can't believe they made this. Why did they do that? That's so stupid. Like, those are the honest to goodness thoughts going through my head almost at every turn in the movie. None of it made any sense. They literally had video montages, like a music video montage, literally of Ben Affleck just dragging, like, basically doing CrossFit training. Not even kidding. With, like, chains and, like, big tires and shit.
No.
I'm not joking. I'm just not kidding.
Just
it's really bad.
It was fucking moving big fucking chains.
I'm not kidding. A montage of it. In that fucking
stupid rubber suit.
He wasn't in the suit. He was just training. Bruce Wayne training, dude.
Stop it. Just stop
training,
it.
Training, getting it in.
Nope.
Hard pass.
No, nope.
Mm-mm. There's still 2 weeks left in my GoFundMe campaign for our vacation, which is coming up. And you can check that out. And I was wondering how you thought about this, because people can actually purchase our coloring book if they'd like to. Want to make that available to people, or what's your druthers on that whole thing?
Do you know Leslie?
Coloring book. You're going to know Leslie. I guess we could sell the color, but there's nothing like intimate about it.
No, definitely not.
The one that we got that we paid for, that one? We have to order more? Is that what you're saying?
No. They can order it directly from Blurb. It's set up on there. There's a whole page and everything.
And we make some money on that?
Yeah, I mean, not a ton, but yeah.
All right. Yes. I don't know.
Maybe. What do you think about it? No?
I don't know. Like, how much money do we make per book? Like a buck?
I don't know. It's more than a buck, but it's not like a ton. They're not super expensive. It's not a big book.
It's not like Teespring. We're not making money. Like Teespring, you make like $7 to $8 a t-shirt.
I think you actually set it up to make whatever you want. It's like you just put in how much you want to
make. $50.
No.
I'm just saying, man. Oh. Intimate, man. It's my fucking coloring on my face and shit.
Is it intimate, though? I'm not sure.
Interracial job.
You're a mess. Well, if people want it, I'll hit me up. How about that? On the Twitters.
I mean, you could buy my personal one for like a bunch of money, maybe.
What are you talking about? Why would they need to buy your personal one?
I don't know. You're right, maybe.
Maybe what? Anyways, I'm going to be in New Orleans next week. If you're in New Orleans and you'd like to come see what the hell's going on, you can come to check out Black Lives UU on Wednesday night. We're going to be at the First Unitarian Church in New Orleans with the Revive Love Tour. Rev Sekou and the Holy Ghost will be playing, and the Blue Team will be there. It's going to be fucking awesome. Very excited about that. And that's it. The fucking end of the tour, at least for now. So yeah. I'm excited. It's the
last
show.
What about Halloween? You got plans for Halloween?
I don't know exactly what we're doing, but yeah, we're going to do something.
Do you have a costume? What are you going to be?
I don't know. I have somebody making something for me, so
my mustache!
My God. I'm not going to have a mustache.
No, that's not your costume? My mustache. No?
So yeah, so that if you're in the New Orleans area, check that out. It's gonna be fun. What do you got going on?
I'm gonna hang out with the friend I was at the bar with the other night because I haven't seen him in a bit, and he's having people over for the Michigan State game.
Michigan State.
Yeah,
and I think, support the team.
Guys, support the team. I think I'm gonna just stay here for Halloween. I think we had kids a bit. You know, it wasn't like a lot, but we had a fair amount of kids. And what day is Halloween this year?
It's a Monday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess, I feel like because we're near the school, too. Like, if the weather's nice, like, I'll be handing out candy from, like, 3 to 5, and then I'll turn the lights off and be like, no, I'm done. Because it gets busy.
Oh, yeah?
It hasn't happened here, but that one year at our other place, like, I started having to, like, hand out nickels and shit. I'm like, fuck, I'm out of candy, and, like, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, I remember like one we like had to like, but it was weird because like one year it was like no kids, and then it was like so many kids.
There's a lot of variables, a lot of factors.
Yeah,
like weather and you know how many bags of candy I buy and how many I eat and how early I buy them.
Right.
how soon I open the bags of candy will determine whether we hang out for Halloween.
Whether we do it or we
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, I've got work and we got this big project and launch coming up, and I got to pivot.
We pivot.
We done
pivot.
Fucked. We fucked up. We fucked part of it up.
Pivot. Oh, you did?
I didn't. I thought I conveyed something. You know, like this happens, right? And I like working with these individuals because they move at the speed of like lightning, kind of thing. And I did say like, you know, you can do this in this manner, but there was a piece that wasn't conveyed completely. At least I thought it was. So. We gotta adjust a little bit, but it's not a big deal. Mm. And really, the thing that we have to change now, I think it's still better having done it this way and now having to like figure it out than having done it from a different way from the beginning. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you built a car, you know, you wanted to build a car. Do you want to build it with these like crappy old tools, or do you want to build the car with these new tools? Like, oh, you built it with these new tools, but it's still got to be on the crappy highway. So you have to like figure out how to get this nice car on the crappy highway. But like, it's still, you want to have it built it with the nice tools. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like where we were at. Like, I'm glad we didn't build a car from the ground up to designed on a crappy highway, right? Like, okay, we built a nicer car. And we got to shoehorn it into a crappy highway, but okay, I'm okay with that.
You're cool with that.
Yeah, I don't do the work. I manage the project more than I actually like code. And this individual's not on my time zone, so it makes it kind of hard sometimes. And I didn't have the heart to Friday night be like, so that thing you've been working on.
Remember that thing? That thing.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's like, I feel a little bit like that's the kind of thing that like everyone bitches about. Like I did that thing though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I pulled that thing. Like, you're like, do this thing. Fucking get it done. Wait, why are you doing it that way?
That the way you did it was not the thing I told you, to do.
I said do this thing, and you did it exactly, but that's not, no. Stop, turn around, do this thing.
That's funny.
So I feel kind of like a dick.
Well, it happens.
It's a pretty amorphous, large kind of like blah thing. It's not going to like come out the box. You know, you have betas and shit for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beta, boop, bop, beep, bop, get it, bop. You're getting goofy. What time is it? He's got to be getting late. Is your cold medicine wearing off?
Must be. Something. Jesus. Cold sucks, too.
Anything else?
No, I think that's everything. I think we got it.
It's been like a four-hour show.
No, it's not even 2 hours. We did good, man. We fucking liggity split. Got it done.
Bing, bang, bong.
Bing,
the whole shebang.
The whole shing bang. The whole shing bang. That's my mother would say.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.